You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
If the blood-thinning drug Xarelto caused you serious bleeding problems, call the doctor. And if you've already done that and you're okay, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns. Nathan Zagura here with a guy that I wish was in training camp when I had this job, Matt Wilhelm. So I could have made you a pet cat, Matt Wilhelm.
Well, thank you, man.
Wouldn't you have liked it? Would you have been excited about it?
No.
Come on. You're fighting for a roster spot. You're not there, and you know the media guy is like, he's talking you up. He's like, I love Matt Wilhelm.
Yeah, but what's everything that's wrong with it is that if a general manager, head coach, or position coach is actually listening to a media guy, like lay into a guy like he's boyfriend and girlfriend, they're in the wrong business.
Boyfriend and boyfriend,
even worse.
Bromance. Hey, a tolerant society, Matt.
That's good.
216-578-0850. Yes, you do. And we're going to have a roundtable now with from ClevelandBrowns.com, Kevin Jones, Andrew Gribble. Guys, we appreciate you taking time. I imagine with all the writing you do, time is at a premium, so we'll make sure that we stay focused here. Big news today, practice, Hayden back, Pryor back, Get back, Johnny still not throwing. Your thoughts on where this team is going to be health-wise headed into the Tampa game.
With the Johnny Manziel stuff, you got to wonder, now that makes Thursday's practice all the more important, because if you wonder if he's not throwing Thursday, is he going to play in that third preseason game?
He's got to.
I mean, you'd think. So that's why maybe Thursday is all eyes are going to be on Johnny, and really out on this press conference afterward where Patton's going to update us on his status. But clearly Pryor getting back is good news, because we heard Flip's comments on Monday. He wants him on the field pretty bad, especially for this big game on Saturday.
So if Johnny doesn't play and Thad gets hurt, who comes in at quarterback? Taylor Gabriel? Terrell Pryor?
I don't know. Not Johnny's going to play. I don't think there's any question.
He was still handing off out there, so you could put him out there to hand the ball off.
But what's still crazy to me, and it's the hysteria that is Johnny Manziel, and just to your words, like all eyes are going to be on the backup quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, you know, come after Thursday post-practice. When it's like no other backup quarterback in the National Football League is getting the run that he is.
Matt, it's not going to end.
I know.
That's who he
is. It's unfortunate.
That's what Johnny Manziel
brings.
At this
point right now, I almost wish it was elsewhere.
I won't go that far. He's shown me a lot in training camp. I've reversed. I remember being here after day one of training camp and saying, is he going
to
be in the NFL next year?
You have to draft Johnny Manziel.
Dude, that's what it is. He's a roller coaster. You're high, you're low on him. Me, now I'm in the middle.
And what did I just say moments ago? An absolute nightmare for a coach, and the quickest way out of town and out of this league is to be a roller coaster football player.
Yep.
All a coach wants to know is, from what am I going to get every Sunday? I'm going to get the same guy. If Josh McCown's going to be a 15 of 26, throwing percentage guy, and for two touchdowns and a pick, and he does it every single week, you know what you're going to get. But you're going to get four touchdowns out of this week. He might throw four picks. He might rush for 100. He might throw for 200 next week. That's the hardest thing to create a game plan for.
Right, and I think McCown was probably that quarterback earlier in his career, too. I think it's with Johnny, it's going to take time.
Yeah.
And it's going to take – there's going to be bumps when he finally gets in. But now I'm leaning more towards the side of, okay, he can have a long NFL career, where at the beginning of training camp, I swear, I didn't know.
So something that, again, Nathan kind of asked me, how would I like to see this third preseason game kind of play out from a quarterback rep standpoint? And I'm going to pose that question to you. Taking into account that Johnny is going to play, that today is his rest day, tomorrow he practices, he plays on Saturday. And what I said was a half of football for McCown, you know, with the ones, and then the first drive of the second half with McCown, and then Johnny in with a majority of the ones. Maybe you get out Thomas and you put in Cam Irving at left tackle, so that Johnny can feel what it's like to play relevant football again.
I like that. My only exception would be if Josh McCown has a good first half. I don't see any need to put him out there in the second half. You want him to kind of go in with some confidence, just like the last game where he had the two interceptions on the first two drives. Then the third one, you get some points out of it. You feel a little bit better about how you end there. But yeah, I kind of like that plan. I think I don't think Josh McCown needs to go all three quarters, which is maybe the customary thing to do with a first team quarterback in the third game. But yeah, I mean, We talked about Manziel with the ones all the way back to the orange and brown scrimmage, and we haven't seen it yet. So maybe this would be the opportunity, because you're probably not going to have it in that fourth.
The more Johnny with the ones, yeah. I mean, that we need to see that. He needs to feel that, and I agree completely with you, Will.
And maybe the more important thing is you want him out there when Tampa Bay's first team defense is out there as well.
Sure.
So maybe that is more important than actually working with your first team offense.
And my mindset in explaining why I want Josh McCown to come back out for that first series is, so many, you know, offenses or defenses get with their coordinators at halftime, they make their adjustments, and this becomes the true dress rehearsal. Just like in a regular season game, they're going to have to go in, make their fixes in their game plan, then come back out and execute and ramp back up for one more drive. You know, it could be a three and out, could be six play stall drive, Andy Lee punts them deep, but then you get Josh McCown at that point, because that's the closest they can mimic what he and that offense is going to have to do once the regular season starts.
Sticking with McCown here, I want to see some big plays from him this week. I know it's been a lot of dink and dunk, and that's kind of this offense, a lot of short passing, but I kind of want to see some chances down the field, especially when you have Travis Benjamin, Taylor Gabriel, some of these guys, give them some confidence with some deep plays down the field. So offensively from McCown, I'm looking for, you know, some 20, 30, 40-yard throws down the field, try and stretch this offense out. That may help the run game too.
It certainly will loosen the defense up. And speaking of that, though, you can't throw jump balls down the field to Andrew Hawkins. It's tough with Taylor Gabriel. They've got to be open. And that's why I think Terrell Pryor is so intriguing to this coaching staff, because he has the speed to get deep and the size to throw jump balls to. What does he have to show you guys, or what are you hoping to see from him now that he is back to work?
I guess you've got to see the reason to bank on potential, because I don't think you're going to see an established wide receiver right away. You know, he's obviously, the reason why you're so intrigued by Pryor is that he has this upside, so he's got to just show you something. He's got to be kind of competent in a lot of the nitty-gritty with being a wide receiver. He's got to get off the line of scrimmage and not get bogged down with press, and he's got to be out there playing a significant amount of plays without the hamstring bother him. That's another key thing.
I want to see him with the ones. I want to see him down by the red zone. If the Browns get down there where they can line him up, that can be unique with him. And like I said, he's a big playmaker. I can see him being that role in this offense, not your every down wide receiver, but someone, a deep target or some special plays drawn up for him. Remember, the Browns coaches are game planning for this game, so there could be a unique wrinkle for Terrell Pryor this week.
But do you waste those good plays in this game if you think he has a chance?
But you've got to see something, right?
No, you do. But I think you send him on some of those intermediate routes that you'd like to see out of Josh McCown. You send him down the field. Whatever gets you excited about why Terrell Pryor can play in the National Football League, you want to see him do, but not specific Pryor routes or specific Pryor wrinkles. And that kind of bridges me to my last question as we're on this topic. Along with Terrell Pryor, Duke Johnson, another guy that's going to be returning to action. I think a lot of people are excited about him and his role in this offense. How much do you think they're going to put these guys on a pitch count?
They've said they're going to put Duke on a pitch count. I don't know if I agree with that. I would like to see him get 10 to 12 carries. What if he could emerge as the starting running back this week? Flip has said, hey, I'll go with the hot hand. What if Duke Johnson gets 12 carries for 86 yards? Then you're feeling so good about this offense. Other teams are scared. It opens up the pass game. This guy's been resting for 2 weeks. You don't want to aggravate the hamstring of Duke Johnson, but if he were to somehow give this offense life, I think he is capable of being a every down running back. I know that the coaching staff wants to ease him into things, but right now, Crowell and West have not grabbed a hold of this running back thing, so why not give Duke a chance?
I think he's the best of the bunch behind a bad offensive line because of his shiftiness and his ability to maybe make something out of nothing. But this is a guy, though, at Miami, I know he's all-time leader in rushing there, who was dinged up a lot, and I just don't know if he can withstand a full NFL workload week after week after
week.
As
a rookie.
And I think it's more important now to get that change of pace element in there first because, as Flip said Monday, Crowell and West, it's still a work in progress getting them more involved in the passing game. They haven't really been able to open up that aspect of Flip's offense, but if you can get Johnson out there and catching some passes, that really changes things up and gives you that new dynamic that he's supposed to bring.
The other thing we observed in practice, they were using Crowell and Duke Johnson together in the backfield.
Good.
Crowell a little bit as a lead blocker, both of those guys in the shotgun together, so you could see that Saturday night in Tampa Bay.
Yeah. And that's one of the questions that I had for you before we kind of continue that talk about Duke Johnson is, do you feel if he does get an opportunity to run the football, you know, and can show that he's a viable threat to not only catch the ball, but to be a runner as well, that the fact that we have three capable runners, but all kind of have their own personality in the same offensive scheme. Does that work to our advantage, or does it work, or could it also be a disadvantage because they're all running the same plays differently with the same offensive line?
Mike Pettine said last year having Ben Tate, Crow, and West was a good problem to have, but it's still a problem. It's still the offense getting into sync with these guys. It's still the O-linemen. They might have to block a little bit differently for Duke Johnson than they do Crowell because he hits the hole quicker. So it's not a bad thing to have depth at running back, obviously, but there's some things to be sorted out here. I could see all three of these running backs playing well into the third quarter.
And I think that it's eventually going to turn into where you're going to have Duke complementing one of the two of Isaiah Crowell and Terrence West. And
that's exactly what I think it's
going to be. And I think I still think that that's wide open at this point because, one, you're not sure what you have yet in Duke Johnson in a game situation. And two, we've talked about a lot, but Crowell and West, I know West had a pretty good game against the Bills, but I don't know if it's enough at this point to say he's gotten that number one job.
The sad thing is to me, though, is we're saying Terrence, he didn't even average 4 yards a carry.
No.
In that game.
It was that was just what the bar was set the previous week against the
Redskins.
So low.
No, but I know. I'm just saying, to me, and this goes back to my point. I'm going to say it. You got a first rounder, you got a second rounder. You got a first rounder, you got a third rounder, maybe a first rounder, and then you have a second rounder. This offensive line is not performing, at least in the preseason, and it's only the preseason, to the level that it needs to perform at for this team to be any kind of good on offense. And I'm starting to get concerned about it. Max coming back from injury, is he the same guy? Joe Thomas is a year older. There seems to be some type of disconnect because last year, while they may not have been able to run block always, they still pass blocked very well. They haven't been pass blocking well early in the preseason. I'm concerned. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else is concerned. I'm concerned about this line.
We got to think about this too.
The offense.
This flip adopted the same zone running scheme that Kyle Shanahan last year. For half the season, it didn't work. It did not work for the second half of the season. This run game was part of the reason why the team lost 5 games in a row. So the biggest thing against the Buccaneers for this Browns team to gain confidence would be to go out and rush for 100 yards and get that confidence right now.
And I know a majority of our talk thus far in the roundtable has been, offensive perspective. But you mentioned, guys, that, Joe Hayden's out of practice. Deshaun Gibson is back out there, so on and so forth. How much are they going to play? Will they be a first half, or are they going to have a cap of plays as well if they see another long drive out there as well?
Kevin and I were talking about this earlier. I think we both agree. I know what I've got out of Joe Hayden. I don't know if I need to see him anymore this preseason.
Right.
I know he might want to get out there, but as you mentioned earlier, the injury we saw of Orlando Scandrick in Dallas, I mean, that's a scary thing. You want to limit those opportunities.
That can change your season.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know these injuries can happen everywhere, but I feel like with him in the secondary and the opportunities it's giving a lot of other guys who are fighting for maybe that last defensive back spot, I don't necessarily need to see Hayden out there, though I know he probably wants to get involved because he's been limited for a lot of training camp.
And here's one last question. I posed this question earlier in the show to Nathan, and he answered it, with flying colors. And this is just, both
he normally
look at
does.
It optimistically or pessimistically. It's all a matter of where you're at on Justin Gilbert. What is the percentage that you put on Justin Gilbert playing out his rookie deal with the Cleveland Browns?
Less than 5%.
Less than 5%?
Gribbs?
If we're being realistic here,
means he's here for the next 2 seasons.
I put it much higher than that.
I mean,
how much higher?
I saw the scrimmage in Buffalo. He was the number 180th player out there.
Right,
he really was.
He's not getting cut this year. So in your scenario, he would have to get cut next year, which I think is still unlikely.
I trust the coaching staff to turn him around. I think they have the skills to do that. Does he want to?
I said 99%.
I said 70. I was about to say 95.
There's cap implications. To me, it would be a massive upset if he doesn't play out his rookie deal. Cap implications of it, the talent they believe in him, that they believe in themselves as coaches to turn it around.
He still doesn't use technique. Years. It's his second year in the league.
Yeah, but a lot of what was the guy's name in Baltimore? Jimmy Smith was about to get run out of Baltimore after 3 years and then played great and got a huge deal. And now he's considered to be one of the better corners in the league.
We can compare cases and cases and cases.
I know. I'm just saying I don't think you get. First of all, it's the first draft pick of Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer.
So there's stipulations tied to this guy. It's not he's the best on the 53 at all. It's this guy was a first-round pick. We've got
to. So just to go back to something I overheard at a bar conversation when you said the same thing, it's not is he the best 53 right this second. It's do you believe that not only can he be part of the best 53 going forward, but that he could be part of the best 10
Here is my argument
forward.
Against this. Okay, you're going to have Kaywan and Joe Hayden have a hamstring injury late in the year against that 49ers. In December, and you're going to have to put Justin Gilbert on the field, and you're you're going to lose a game.
Pierre Desir is going to be ahead of
him. Okay, I'm saying if you have to put Justin Gilbert on the field late in the year when he hasn't played all year, you're going to lose a game. A team is going to viciously attack
him. It's possible that Charles Gaines would play in that scenario.
Okay, so we're talking about six-round picks playing over a first-rounder now.
Right. He's not ready to play right now. But you believe in the reason he was drafted there is his potential, his athleticism.
I've heard these coaches say the minute you get in the building, the draft pick doesn't matter. So I don't know.
It matters.
It does, I guess.
Listen, look at the NFL. It's a talent league. If you have talent, you're going to get a lot of chances.
Hey, this is a realistic roundtable. I'm putting it at 5%.
The realistic roundtable. Let's sell it.
That is not even realistic, though.
Listen, I call it how it is. I see talent, and that's how I see it.
I know. I gotcha. I see it. Kevin Jones, strong, 5%. We'll revisit this at some point. I mean, it will be answered.
Do you want him on the field this year, Justin Gilbert?
I've seen him flash good things. I need more consistency out of him. I'm not ready to put him on the field. And the good news is I don't have to put him on the field.
So he's
right
going to be inactive for much of this season probably on game day.
It depends of how his value is as a kick returner.
True. Now, that part I could see him excelling at. I can see him excelling with the ball in his hands.
He become your next specialist?
No. I think that he would be, to me, you're looking at him as a kick returner, and I don't think it matters as much anymore. Because how many kicks do you get? What percentage of kickoffs are even returned now?
2 out of 5.
I think if you're a dynamic punt returner, you have a better shot than being a dynamic
kick returner.
These touchbacks
aren't even close either.
No, they're like 9 yards back. Yeah, forget about it.
End of the stand.
Hey, the happiest thing for me would be for Justin Gilbert to prove me wrong. I want this guy to be good. I really do. I'm putting that out there.
I think he has a better chance than Terrence West of playing out his rookie deal.
I think we're in the same boat there.
So you're saying 5% for both of those guys?
I don't want to put, you know what? I don't want to put numbers at it. It could be higher than 5% for Justin, but it's to me right now.
What do you mean? You call like you see. You took a stand. Stick with your stand.
If you're going to simulate the rest of his tenure with the Browns, I don't see it being. There being many highs.
So I said 99. You said 95. You said just 5. You 70. Said 70. And Dino, I think, said like 50.
65.
If
65.
He was a third round pick, would he be cut this year?
No.
Okay.
The reason that that's difficult to answer is because if he didn't have the athletic traits and gifts that he has, he wouldn't have been a first round pick. Do you know what I mean? A guy that wasn't as athletic or a specimen.
Like,
you
got to
remember,
he had an
awful year at Oklahoma State, too, and was able to turn it around. So this guy has shown the ability to turn things around.
Leon McFadden was a third-round pick and was just dreadful, and it was obvious. But he was neither big nor fast nor exceptional as an athlete in any way. So there was no upside. Justin Gilbert right now is fool's gold because he looks – exactly like you want a quarter to look. He runs
like Tarzan, plays like Jane.
He has made some unbelievable interceptions this year in camp, but then he can also get roasted by undrafted guys and look like he's never played corner before.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it, and I thought OTAs. It was going into the mini camp. He was playing pretty well in OTAs, and then he missed those last three practices with a personal reason, and that's just been a struggle.
The problem with him too isn't the talent too. It's you got to fit in with the team. You got to be about the team, and you got to be on the same page with the veterans and prove to them too. And so far, we're still waiting.
And that's one of the interesting things about going from college to the NFL. And you and I have talked about this. You were the big fish. You were the leader of your defense in college. You were the man.
Yes.
And you come into the NFL, and you might not be starting right away, and you certainly aren't. Very few people are going to come in and be the man right away. And so for a guy like Justin Gilbert, you know, he was the guy. He was the high-profile guy on that Oklahoma State defense. He comes in here. He had that confidence early. All of a sudden, that confidence was robbed because it wasn't performing. And I think there's a reason why when you look at the guys who were drafted, you know, Kirksey was last year, but look at the guys who were drafted this year. A lot of them were leadership-type guys they felt very comfortable with in their roles, guys who are mature. Ibrahim Campbell comes to mind immediately. Nate Orchard comes to mind. Shelton. These were guys
that
they
felt very comfortable. So you're saying it's a personality issue with Gilbert.
Well, I think that part of it is – I think there's the football component where he's slow to master the technique because he didn't play with technique really in college, and Jim O'Neill said as much. And then there's the off-the-field part, fitting it into a locker room, I think fitting in to what it means to be a professional. I don't think all guys naturally get that, and especially I think it's hard, and you said this too, for the guys that got by solely on talent, just supreme God-given gifts. Everybody in the NFL's got God-given gifts. and they're professionals, and they work hard, or else they don't stay in the NFL.
What if Pierre Desir comes in and is just a lockdown cornerback next year? I mean, there's just not going to be room for this guy.
Well, you know, I believe that to be the case. But it would give you a lot of flexibility.
True.
You can move Hayden into the slot at times if Gilbert really develops, and you have 2 6-foot-plus guys on the outside, which I think is the trend in the National Football League.
Yeah.
And then you could have Hayden move around, and you could do – there's a ton of things you could do in that case.
The return of Desir, by the way, this weekend is another big thing for, I think, this Browns defense. He was playing so well going into
I want to see him on Vincent Jackson.
And
– some Pierre V. Jackson.
And Scott Solomon returns to Tampa. They caught him in the middle of the year last year. This guy gets to, you know, stick it to Tampa a little bit.
Well, hopefully he does. I need to see more out of Scott Solomon before I feel comfortable with him playing on the field.
He's playing on the field.
Mingo needs to be out there. I don't know. I think that if
how far is Mingo away? Do we know?
I think Mike Pettine said earlier this week that the opener is looking like a potential return okay. day, but preseason is probably out of the question.
That's fine.
If you were going to ask me right now for one position group that I think is set in stone, the four guys that are going to make it, it's outside linebacker in terms of making the initial 53, but I wouldn't be surprised if they feel somebody who is cut somewhere is an upgrade over Solomon. That is one spot that they make a post 53 move.
What about inside linebacker?
I agree with that.
Inside linebacker, I think they're set because I think they love Tank on special.
No, I mean, like, that's another
position.
That's
another one that's locked, set. But yeah. That's not one where I don't think there's a
right,
post 53
no. I agree that Scott Solomon needs to show us a lot more, but in terms of run stopping, he's above
the
bar.
He's peeking in. He was the one guy that wasn't setting the edge last week.
Okay,
I want to see it this week.
One mistake in the preseason is not going to wipe out off-season full of triumphs for Scott Solomon. I mean, or is it going to for Josh McCown, too?
So is he a practice player?
Like Travis Benjamin?
who's caught a touchdown in a game so far. All right, anyway, guys, always a pleasure. They are producing phenomenal content, and my goodness, a lot of it at ClevelandBrowns.com. They are the workhorses of this organization. Kevin Jones, Andrew Gribble, gentlemen, always a pleasure. You can follow them on Twitter at Andrew_Gribble and, of course, at Mr_Kevin Jones.
Thanks, Nathan.
Gentlemen.
You got it, guys.
Thanks.
All right, we'll be back with more. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We play a little higher or lower, Madden edition, Matt Wilhelm.